Welcome to the 10K Collective podcast. Listen, if you want hacks, my friend, I'm afraid you're in the wrong place. Our philosophy has grown out of the 10K Collective London Masterminds. Members, by the way, make between $500,000 and $7 million a year in e-commerce, most on Amazon. Many have doubled revenue in the last 12 to 18 months. If you're that kind of person, this podcast is made for you. We're not puritanical. We use hacks. We just don't think you should focus on them if you're building a real business. Instead, we focus on what's been proven to work in the group. Real brand building, clear strategic objectives, courageous long-term goals, and long-range thinking. If you like that focus, keep listening, and welcome to the 10K Collective. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. I'm talking to Alex Oxford of Tax Valet, and as you'd expect, we're talking about tax, sales tax in the USA. Not a sexy subject, but I think what's really important that Alex has already shed a lot of light on some complex topics and simplified it. We're just talking about this, the fact that, of course, there are always nuances. So you should, if you have any kind of doubt, you really should consult a professional. And people always say that for legal reasons. But I think also, actually, from the business point of view, let me just say that most of us never spend enough time talking to our accountants, and sales tax or whether that be any kind of tax is something we should probably all address, even if it's just to confirm that what we suspected was okay, that our strategy is about right, because guessing and knowing are very different things. So Alice, welcome back. Let's talk about that lovely tax subject, sales tax nexus. Let's dig into exactly how we determine whether your business has sales tax nexus, because that's obviously one of the things that is you know, the start of everything else. First of all, what does even mean? What does the word nexus mean?
So nexus is just a legal term. It means that you have a sufficient presence in a state and therefore have a sales tax collection and remittance responsibility. Don't get confused if someone says nexus or anything else in the sales tax space. What they're just trying to say is that you have to collect and remit sales tax. And there's a whole bunch of different ways you can have nexus, which we'll be diving into.
Well, okay, that tees up my next question, which is, how do we find out if we got tax nexus? What causes it?
So it's a loaded question, right? So there's a lot of different ways that you can have sales tax nexus in a state. But in general, the easiest ways for Amazon sellers and e-commerce sellers is going to be through economic nexus and through physical presence. And I suppose if you're working with online affiliates as well, then there's a potential for you to have nexus through the affiliates. This is complicated stuff, right? So if you have employees and contractors, you're renting property, leasing property, if you have multiple businesses in the United States, there's all of these other factors that could come into play. And if that applies to you, just know that you should probably get some help with this. But the most common ways to have nexus in the United States for online businesses is going to be physical presence and economic nexus. Now, you might say physical presence, you know, I'm based in the UK, I don't have a physical presence in the United States. And that might be true unless you are selling on Amazon FBA. If all of your inventory is being stored in those fulfillment by Amazon warehouses, that's creating a physical presence in the state because your inventory is being stored there. And we've seen a number of Amazon FBA warehouses audited by the states and then going after these businesses for not collecting or remitting sales tax. I just had a prospective client meet with me yesterday because Wisconsin audited the Amazon FBA warehouses. So physical presence. And then the second way is through economic nexus. So economic nexus means that you've crossed certain sales or transaction thresholds and therefore have a sales tax collection responsibility. The states vary in what their thresholds are. The most common threshold is $100,000 in sales or 200 transactions. The states vary in what they define as a sale. Some states only look at taxable sales. Some states look at taxable and non-taxable. Some look at only retail sales. Some look at retail and wholesale. So there's a bit of nuance in doing this analysis can be kind of time consuming and make you go crazy for sure.
Sounds relatively straightforward, but these are not in and of themselves presumably reliable numbers, 100,000 and 200 transactions. I guess they're kind of warning flags that if you're hitting around the $100,000 revenue in a particular state or 200 transactions, then you should at least be investigating. One practical question, which may or not be in your remit, but how on earth do we find out? If I'm based in UK, as I am in London, and I have a bunch of inventory around Amazon, and how do I figure out the tax nexus by state?
Where your inventory is being stored.
Well, yeah, it's not even just that, because let me just think through a practical example, right? So I guess in theory, this is probably simple, but I'm just thinking it through practically. Let's say I ship a bunch of stuff in and it lands in LAX, because a lot of people, you know, land stuff in Port of LA or LA airports, if you're air freighting, and then it gets shipped off to, say, Southern California. And then maybe it goes to Texas. A lot of stuff goes there because it's big. And then say some stuff goes to Pennsylvania because that fulfills the East Coast stuff. And let's keep it as simple as that. I've got three different warehouses, three different states. What do I do next? What's next?
That's the larger problem here, though, is the fact that Amazon's going to keep moving your inventory. So even for this example, for three states, your inventory could be moved all over. And we had a client of ours who had this relationship with Amazon to where he was only shipping to one state. He was just shipping it to a California warehouse, and that they redistributed his inventory across 40 different states. And he got audited by one of them. He said, "What the heck? I was just sending it to one state. Why am I being audited?" And then that's when he realized that Amazon was moving the inventory around for him. But yes, going back to your simple example, if the inventory is redistributed to three different warehouses, and if that would mean that you have nexus in those three states, and we're going to ignore other factors like marketplace facilitator laws, for example, which we talked in our last episode about. But if your inventory is being stored in those states, you have a physical presence, and therefore it would need to get a sales tax permit and then begin collecting and remitting sales tax in those states.
Okay, so thank you for that. So you need to get a sales tax permit, collect and remit sales tax. All right. So we've already talked about the marketplace facilitator laws, which means approximately, if I understand what you were saying, half of the states have decided that they're going to make Amazon or eBay or whatever directly responsible for collecting and remitting the sales tax. So
that's right.
Just remind me, if you were in a marketplace facilitator state, does that mean, and again, I may be asking the same questions I asked in the last episode, but I think we need to drill into and hammer home the basics. If I'm in a marketplace facilitator state, does that mean that I don't need to get any certification? I don't need to do anything? I just simply let Amazon do it? What do I need to do?
So generally speaking, you will not have sales tax liabilities, and you don't really have to worry about getting a permit in a marketplace facilitator state. But that's not the full story. And there's a lot of complexity and nuance to this. I don't know if we want to rehash. I think if you are interested in the nuances of marketplace facilitator laws, you should check out the last episode that we recorded. But in general, if you're selling on a marketplace, you don't have much to worry about in the marketplace facilitator states.
So let's assume then, I mean, recently I had an issue with some inventory in the States and I needed to get a bin check done. And it turned out that, as you said, of course, they spread it across. I think they spread my inventory and it was only a few hundred units of something. I'm like 400 units left at the point where I had the issue come up. And maybe it's more than that, a few hundred, it wasn't like tens of thousands, but they were across 13 different states, or at least 13 different warehouses, mostly different states. Let's assume 13 different states. Presumably the physical nexus thing we've dealt with, but how do we deal with economic nexus in different states? Because it's quite easy on Amazon to figure out which warehouses your inventory is stored in. I say easy, you have to dig around in Seller Central. Actually, it's not very, very pleasant, but yeah.
Yeah, inventory detail report.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so inventory detail report there. So that's straightforward. But how do I figure out about the sales thresholds in terms of revenue or unit sales by state? Because I don't remember last time I checked into this in detail, that the Seller Central really showed that in any detail.
No, they don't show it, and they don't make it easy, because when you're doing that transaction export, you can't look at a full year and export the transactions that way. So it's kind of time consuming and difficult to do the analysis yourself. There are some tools out there that can help you. I mean, we have a spreadsheet on our website that has those thresholds and links to the laws and explanations for each of the laws, for the economic nexus laws. We also provide the service for Amazon businesses, where we'll go through and analyze the sales state by state. relatively cheap. And if you end up becoming a client of ours, the analysis fee counts towards your first invoice. So it's free. But it can be challenging and time consuming to get this information, look at the states, making sure you're calculating it correctly, making sure you're taking into account wholesale or marketplace sales or retail sales. Each state defines it a little bit differently. So it is a challenge. I wish there is an easy answer.
Okay, so broadly speaking, it sounds like the most practical approach is to use a third party of some kind to do the analysis for you, because it's difficult to figure it out. I mean, can you do that? How does that work practically? You have an API that links to the back end of Amazon and then to a software as a service type thing, or can you do it manually?
Yeah, so we work with a variety of tools. So for our Nexus analysis, we're looking at multiple factors for the business, right? We're looking at all of your transactions for the last 12 months from Amazon. We'll go in and pull those from Amazon. We're looking at where your inventory is being stored by Amazon. And then we're hitting all of these other areas that sometimes businesses forget about, like working with affiliates, or if you own other businesses, or if you have contractors. We're just hitting every single point to make sure that you have a proper understanding of where you have sales tax nexus.
Cool. So sounds like doing it yourself is a bit tricky. If you are going to try and do it yourself, then is there particular places to look on Seller Central to figure out where you sold X units or Y revenue in particular states?
What I would do is I would pull the transactions. I think you would have to do multiple exports because they only let you look at a certain time frame. But I would pull the transactions out and then do some Excel work, right? And do a pivot table. And then that way you can see the count of transactions and the dollar values state by state. TaxJar also makes a tool that can help you with this, but it might be a little bit overwhelming for particularly international businesses that don't know how everything works in the US. Those would be my suggestions.
For that, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, some people really want to do DIY and some people just kind of outsource. So there are two ways of doing it. I mean, I guess if you're based in the States and you understand it and you have a good accountant, and mind you, they'd have to be a really seriously good accountant to really get their head around sales tax. I think it's a very specialist area. So, okay. So I think that deals more or less with economic nexus and the physical presence. Are the other things, We talked about affiliates, and obviously it depends on your business model. If you have your own web store, presumably you're much more likely to have affiliates. I mean, what do you find that comes up with affiliates, employees, contractors, renting, leasing property? Do you find that's a practical issue most of the time, or is that really quite specialist?
For sure. No, it comes up all the time. And I get these questions all the time from our clients, like, I had no idea that all these things could have an impact. And once they realize the things that they're doing create sales tax nexus, they actually reconsider. I mean, visiting trade shows to market your products can create sales tax nexus. Having multiple businesses that are selling same or similar product lines, your sales tax nexus can cross-contaminate. Working with affiliates, generally just working with an affiliate won't create too much of a problem. However, if you have a substantial affiliate program and affiliates are a substantial share of your revenue, then it could create sales tax nexus in a bunch of states. So there are very real implications. And the issue here is if you cross that threshold, right? Let's take inventory, for example. The state doesn't care if you have one unit or 1,000 units. The state is just trying to determine if they can come after you for it. And so there's not a whole lot of gray area. You know, we had a client of ours saying, I'm not going to register because I only have 3 units of inventory in there right now. You know, I might have more inventory later on. I said, yeah, but your liabilities are massive. He's like, well, I'll fight it because I only have a little bit of inventory. And it did become a problem and he lost. And all I can really say is, you know, I tried to warn you. So,
yeah. You should have listened to your tax advisor.
Yeah. I mean, listen to your tax advisor.
Yeah. So basically, if I understand, that's a really important point. There's a very, very big difference between economic nexus, which is based on unit sales or revenue number, so some kind of threshold, versus physical presence, which is you've got one unit in the state, you should register, assuming it's not a marketplace facilitated state and stuff, you should register for sales tax straight away.
Exactly.
Okay, very, very interesting. So there's like a stark difference there.
Same with same with employees, right?
Okay.
Contractors in many states, owning, renting property, there's a whole bunch of things, yeah.
Okay, very interesting. Okay, so there's quite a sharp difference in the way that physical nexus and economic nexus work in sort of practical terms, really. So Okay, that's very interesting. Let's move on to then the getting permits bit. What are the implications for international businesses then? Let's say that I'm, you know, based in the UK or for that matter, Germany or wherever. I mean, one question is, does it make any difference where you're based? And that's one question I should deal with.
So does it make a difference? I think the states would like to say it doesn't make a difference. So when it comes to the actual processing of the permit application, it's not like they're going to be looking at you substantially different and saying, oh, he's from the UK, deny his permit. Not at all. The states love to process permit applications and they'd love to have you on their roster so they can take your money, right? But there is a difference with the process. There's two large differences. So the first being, it can be very difficult to actually submit the permit paperwork, the permit registration to the state, if you don't have what's referred to as an ITIN, an International Taxpayer Identification Number. An ITIN is like what we refer to in the United States as a social security number, but it's for international businesses, or sorry, international people, parties, business owners. So you would still need to get an FEIN, which is at the business level. And whether or not you want or decide to get an ITIN is not a topic that we'll dive into here, but I will tell you that there are certain states where it's actually extremely difficult to get a sales tax permit if you don't have an ITIN. And we're talking like we've had to send our employees into the Department of Revenue. This is Arizona in particular, in order to open up the accounts. What you'll find if you're trying to do these sales tax permit registrations yourself is online systems won't work for you if you're an international business because you can't put in your address correctly. You can't put in your phone number correctly. You can't put in your credit card address correctly for them to charge the $10 for the permit. So there's lots of little things that can mess you up. And if you are stuck with that, you have a few options. Shameless plug, you can hire us. We'll do the sales tax permit registrations for you. The second is that many of these states will have a paper application and you can fill out the paper application and generally get to the point that you need to in order to actually get your permit processed correctly. So start with the paper applications if you're outside of the US. So that's the first implication, right? It's a little bit more challenging just because the online systems don't work well. The second doesn't have to do so much with the permit, but what you do after you get the permit. Because after you get your sales tax permit, you're now responsible for collecting and paying the sales tax, right? The issue is when you are preparing the sales tax returns, many of these states, their online systems, when you want to pay the sales tax, they won't take a credit card, they'll only take a bank account, and they'll only take a US bank account. And this is where it is a huge, huge pain, a huge issue for international businesses. If you don't have a US bank account, all the money is being wired to your UK bank account, you can't pay the tax anymore. So we actually just got done cleaning up a huge project for an Amazon seller based in Poland. And she thought she was doing the right thing. She struggled to open up permits in about 20 states. She was telling me what a nightmare that was not having an ITIN. I was like, yep. And then all the states started coming after her because she wasn't paying the tax. She wanted to pay the tax. She had the money to pay the tax, but it was in a non-US foreign bank account and it wouldn't transfer. So generally speaking, in order to open up a US bank account, you need to have an ITIN, that ITIN, the ITIN that we were just talking about that makes it so much easier to get a sales tax permit. You're going to need that to open up a US bank account. And typically, you need to actually visit the United States in order to open up a US bank account. However, we do have a banking partner we've been working with to open up bank accounts for sales tax purposes without you having to actually travel here, which you would think it would be a whole lot easier to open up a bank account so that you can pay sales tax. You'd think the states would make it easier and they would just have a McDonald's window that you can just drive by and throw the cash in and drive off. But no, it's always got to be difficult. So if you are struggling with opening a US bank account for the purposes of sales tax or other reasons, reach out to me, alex@thetaxvalet.com, and I can get you connected with our partners who can help.
Excellent. Well, Yeah, once again, it makes you think that Europe and is actually quite slick on a lot of things. I mean, I know that Americans come to London sometimes. Well, a lot of Americans come to London. They look a bit sort of amazed when you just wave your card at something. It goes beep, and you just paid. They're kind of still amazed by contactless. They're like, guys, like magic. Where have you been for the last 10 years? You know, so there's some, you know, we all always tend to think of the States as being on the cutting edge of technology. And in a lot of ways, of course, it is. They pioneered the internet as such and also e-commerce. But having said that, the banking system seems to be somewhere so about in the last century. So, yeah, I can believe you. If somebody said that about UK, I'd say, nah, they're just talking rubbish. It's easy. So in some ways, it's a lot easier for me to just simply pay my assistant in the Philippines, for example, who I pay today in Filipino pesos using TransferWise, a piece of cake, than somebody in the States who happens to say the same language, but there's no ease of transaction going on there at all.
That's a great point about TransferWise too. I just wanted to bring this up. Many people think that they can use a TransferWise account because they have a quote unquote bank account and routing number. They think they have a US bank account and routing number. That bank account and routing number won't work for sales tax purposes. So there's a couple of these services out there. TransferWise is a really popular one. It won't work for sales tax. I promise you. We've tried. We really, really wish it did.
What about things like Payoneer,
nope.
World First?
Nope. Exactly.
What's the other ones? Currencies Direct? Because they're often used to collect payments from Amazon. So payments, Amazon will remit dollars to one of those guys, and then you transfer it to US dollar account held in the UK, for example.
So Payoneer also doesn't work. And I would imagine these other ones don't. So you need like a bona fide bank account, which is ridiculous. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, it's the American states. Well, I guess it makes sense because they're too small to be, you know, run like serious countries. Because they're not countries, they're states, but they're not just local. It's something that Brits probably have their trouble getting their head around. Australians, obviously, and Germans, two other federal countries that spring to mind, will have less of a problem because they have their own parliament for each one. Mm-hmm. They're used to the idea. In Britain, it's just like an alien concept. There's a local council that can raise council tax on you, and that's about it. And then there's the national government, and that's it. So it really got to get your head around it. Okay, so moving on then, so assuming that you've got a TIN, which I believe, by the way, you can get online. I've just discovered recently, I wanted to get one for a random reason, just to go in an Amazon Associates account, the Amazon affiliate account in the US. It discovered, oh, I've got to get a TIN, which is for an individual, right? The EIN number is for the business.
Correct.
Itself. I have to say, I didn't find getting an EIN number particularly difficult.
EIN's easy.
The TIN number, I haven't really... Is TIN harder? It's something I haven't bothered to look into yet. I was assuming that I just need to make a few calls.
So the EIN is real simple. It takes like a few more days for international businesses, but it's easy. And it's really cheap if you want to use an online service. I think they'll charge like $100 to get it for you. The ITIN, the TIN, is a lot more challenging. It takes about 3 to 4 months, and it's just a waiting game. It takes a while. So we work with a partner who only does TINs for international businesses. It's the only thing that they do. They do nothing else, and they do it really well. And so we can put you in contact with them.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's really sobering, because I was assuming, because I haven't got around to doing that, but obviously I've got an EIN number, which is per company, and got that back in the day in 2014 when I was importing stuff from China for the first time into the US, and it was no big deal. So I was assuming TIN was that simple, but of course, turns out it isn't. So that's very interesting. I mean, I guess the EIN is for the whole of the United States, right? Is that correct?
That's right.
Whereas the TIN is per state, individual state.
No, TIN is still at the federal level, but it can be used. It can be used for these state permits, and it can also be used to open up a bank account. It can be used for a whole bunch. It can be used for your federal taxes. Think of it, think of it like a social security number, but many of your international businesses won't really know what that is in the United States. But it's like, instead of having a social security number, you'd have an ITIN as an international person.
Yeah, in Britain, we have UK, we have the national insurance number, which is, I think, broadly speaking, similar. I mean, obviously, they work in quite different ways. I mean, healthcare, you know, it's a mystery to Brits. I mean, we don't understand the American system. Okay, so thank you for flagging that up. So the apparently little job of getting a TIN sounds like it's a big hairy deal.
Yes.
how quickly do your guys do it out of interest? Because 3 or 4 months sounds like a massive delay.
I think they get it done in like 2 or 3, but it varies. There can be things that come up and it's a whole process.
Okay. I mean, that has been my experience. I have to say that, again, people talk about bureaucracy in Europe. And yeah, look, if you're dealing with Germany, they're famous for bureaucratic. But apart from that, I mean, Britain, we had, we'll see what happens with Brexit. It reminds me once again that if you live in the UK, that you should take advantage of the company laws here. I mean, you can set up a company for literally £13, about $20. It takes about, 40 minutes of online filling. Maybe it's an hour and a half first time you do it. And it's done within 4 hours. You've got a company. It's pretty simple. And importing here, you got to pay VAT, which is horrible, but it's pretty straightforward. I mean, it always amazes me how much of a big deal other countries make of these things. But so we must, to put it on its head, if you're based in the UK, do not assume that everywhere else in the world offers as fluent a service as that. You may think HMRC, which is Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, are horrible, but you ain't seen nothing yet until you've dealt with the US authorities.
Thanks for listening to the 10K Collective podcast. I really hope you found the show helpful. I mentioned the London-based masterminds we've been running since September 2017. Members of the 10K Collective Mastermind make a minimum of about £480,000 a year, well over €600,000 or dollars. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/10KC, K for kilo, C for Charlie. £1 million mastermind members make a minimum of £1.2 million a year. That's about $1.5 million US or euros. To find out more about that mastermind, go to amazingfba.com/MPM. That's M for mother, P for Peter, M for mother. Thanks for listening.